Yo, little kids, turn off your TVs and listen to me. We about to do our ABCs. Y'all ready? Hey yo, A is for the AIDS, B is for the bullets, C is for the crime, D is for the dealers, E's for education, F is for freedom, G is for gangsters, everywhere I see them, H is for him.
It is September 22nd, 2023. You're listening to A Different Lens, a podcast produced by the Hampton Institute. Today we're chatting with author Chris Fry about his recent article entitled Artificial Intelligence and the Class Struggle. This was originally published in fightingwords.net, but has been published in other places such as Monthly Review Online. So initially we talk about the UAW strikes and the effects that currently having on the auto industry, and then we just delve into just talking about artificial intelligence and how it can be used to in relation to class struggle, and how it can potentially be used to harm workers, what may be some potential solutions. So yeah, listen in. Hey Chris, thank you for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Of course. So my first question is just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm a 74-year-old Gomer. I was an anti-war activist back in the late 60s. Joined a collective of people that moved to Detroit in the early 70s. Got a job in the auto industry and worked for years as an assembler at Chrysler Lynch Road Assembly before they closed the plant in 1980. I have been an activist in Detroit and in other places that I moved from, and a writer in left-wing newspapers, including now with the Communist Workers League, and have written essays for them, including one that I guess is today's topic of conversation, artificial intelligence and the class struggle.
Yeah, we will very much be talking about that. But yeah, so you being a former auto worker, I bet you have some interesting thoughts on the current UAW strike, no?
Absolutely. I fully support the necessity and the strategies of this strike. I fully support all the demands. I recognize that the auto industry has extracted from the labor of its workers billions of dollars, including $24 billion in the last year, has paid their executives hundreds of times what the average auto worker makes, conducts what didn't exist when I was working is a tiered pay system where they pay McDonald's style wages, and of course McDonald's workers deserved a lot much higher wages, but McDonald's wages to their entry level workers that could last as long as 8 years. So yes, I'm very much interested in the strike and fully supportive of it, and I think that the issue of artificial intelligence and productivity increases that the capitalist class, including the auto executives and owners, are so enthralled by now has a lot to do with this strike and the issues that it raises with electric vehicles and the production of batteries and a whole range of technological increases in the plant to increase productivity, which means, in effect, to extract more surplus value from the workers and squeezing more value from the workers using these technical tools instead of having them being used for the benefit of society. So, yes, I'm very interested in the auto workers' strike.
Yeah, and I find the tactics they're using interesting in the sense that they're having, to my understanding, they're having only a couple of key places strike for now, but they could potentially activate other locations later. And it kind of goes and it creates kind of a wave effect where you're tapping at the key places. And then, right, if the demands aren't met, you just keep increasing the number of sites that are striking.
That's absolutely correct. Yes. It's a strategy that does several things. They're, for one thing, they're striking individual plants in all three of the big three automakers at the same time. That's a very new strategy. And you're right. They're striking just three particular locations, which not only accomplishes what you say, it builds momentum as a wave, just as you described, but it also preserves the strike fund for a longer period of time, indicating to the companies that the union is preparing itself for a long battle, if necessary. And the longer that they can show how they can strike and stop operations, the shorter the strike needs to be. That's what strikes are.
Yeah, and I personally, I love it. I love it. You know, the new tactic being used, and yeah, like you're saying, right, kind of slowly turn up the heat on these guys and signal to, you know, the executives of, hey, we can do this for a while. We're ready for the long haul. I love it. I love it.
One other thing, too, that I like about this strike and the leadership in particular is the openness to the members conducted by the leadership, where they're using social media. I was, before I worked at Chrysler, I worked at a steel warehouse plant in Detroit, and I became a union steward and bargaining committeeman and a small steel warehouse that fed the auto industry. And I recall that we became engaged in a strike. But before the strike, of course, we were bargaining with the company. My little group put out leaflets on each stage of the negotiation talking about what was offered and what we were counter-offering and so on. And this shocked I remember the UAW agent for our union was shocked that we were openly talking about union bargaining negotiations at the time, but we kept doing it, and every vote that was taken during that strike was unanimous up until the time that we finally accepted the final offer. And what I like about this leadership is that they're doing exactly that. They're being open with the members about negotiations. President Fain took an offer from the company and openly displayed his disgust with it by tossing it in the wastebasket online and so on. And they're being open and informative to the membership, which I really admire.
Oh, yeah. It definitely creates a situation because, as I said, they're also engaging on social media. So as well, they can garner support, further support from the populace. But on top of that, because of that as well, like you said, they're being open with the membership. Man, yeah, so that keeps everything transparent and above board, right? So then everyone is on the same page.
Exactly. And what it also does is this all creates an example for other unions. This ties in with current strikes going on with the screenwriters and the Screen Actors Guild that's going on, and it ties in with the flight attendant strike that's on the horizon. And of course, they're using the model of the UPS successful bargaining as a basis. So it's the summer of strikes, and the more open and informative you are to the union membership, the stronger your effort will be. And that's proven true now.
1,000%. But yeah, let's delve into the article. So one of the things you mentioned, because you quoted the New York Times with, I think you said like there were like 1,000 people or something, like a not insignificant number of individuals asking for a pause on on the development of AI, right? Because of the potential dangers and the potential concerns, right?
Right.
So do you think there's actually going to be a pause in that development? And do you think a pause would actually be beneficial? Because this is an off comment I've heard in the past, but it kind of makes sense where you have some of the people who are asking for a pause, but it's more so for that AI, because right now it's kind of like a Wild West, right? Anyone can, and the pause well, could be utilized to go and just have, a select few corporations or individuals, you know, kind of fence everything in and have them take control of the situation.
Right. Well, remember that everything for under our capitalist system is designed for profit and designed for monopolistic hegemony. And that means that their pause that they're talking about is trying to restrain, trying to restrict the development of AI tools and artificial general intelligence, which is the overall scheme of this, to the monopolies that currently exist. So I don't think it's going to be successful because there's a lot of companies out there that will go into it anyway. But yes, that's what they're trying to do, is create a pause. And remember, this is a design for them to increase profits, to extract more and more wealth from the working class. So it's their attempt to, and they recognize within themselves that there are many dangers when they utilize this tool for themselves. So that's why they, and there's many opportunities for profit. So they want to restrict it to a smaller and smaller group of monopolies and financiers. The danger for them is that if you use, for example, if venture capitalists use, which is very likely tied to the tech companies involved with AI, use it for their investment visions, then they could create a lot of fiascos within Wall Street as they make their investment decisions based on what skewered artificial intelligence output. That means that they could be listening to what they call delusions from artificial that are generated from artificial intelligence, picking up bad data or using wrong algorithms, and creating financial catastrophes for themselves as they're gambling on Wall Street. So yeah, they recognize dangers, but I don't think they're going to resist going into it. And I also talked in the paper about the military utilizing it. And if the one says they recognize the intense danger of having autonomous weapons out there, able making their own decisions on military attacks, and on the other hand, they're just so eager to get into that technology to make the wealth from it that they can't resist it.
Definitely. Just because. So, but at least when it comes to military, if ever there is a technological advantage we can have, right? That's what the military pushes for, just because, right? And I argue it could be a situation where they're pushing forward even further now, given, right, low recruitment numbers. And so, right, if you don't have enough people, right, bodies to go and to go to war, right, how can you offset that, or how can you make up for that, right? And obviously, that would be the use of artificial intelligence, you know, whether that be in the form of drone swarms, or that be in the form of regular drones, or that be in the form of robots, or not necessarily, Terminator like robots, but you know what I mean. Just you go, you make a contraption, you plant a gun on it, and you just give it AI and just let it run wild. But yeah, I think that the military is definitely right, is obviously very interested in AI and looking at it. But yeah, on the financial side, there is a major concern, I would say, because yeah, if they are having, you know, they are going to have AI going and basing their investments and trades and things of that sort off of what the AI is telling them, right? It could easily, the market's already manipulated, but it could be manipulated even further. You know, wrong information given or given at the wrong time could have some serious impacts, not just obviously for them, right, on a financial level, but for the average American person.
Precisely. Because look what happened when that happened in the Great Recession, that the scramble for vast wealth from the housing, the home mortgage scandal, the home mortgage ripoff of the population of, cost millions of jobs and cost the population to lose millions of homes in that fiasco. So yes, the ramifications are for the population, for the working class as a whole, are monumental, to say the least.
Yeah, and I think that it's also a major issue just because, right, once you get AI fully adapted, right, then because I don't know because it kind of reminds me in some ways of the book by Francis Fox Piven and Richard Cloward, right, Regulating the Poor. And so my question is like, okay, so if they do go through this whole AI thing and it decimates jobs or turns people into who were making good money into, you know, wage slaves, right? And they're making, you know, terrible amounts of money, right? Are they going to then expand a social safety net? Because if they contract it, right, it could end up a situation where people have nothing left to lose. We have nothing left, and people with nothing left to lose, those are dangerous people, you know, to the system, you know?
Right. Well, the same people that are eager, I'm talking about within the capitalist society, AI within, because I don't want to think that it isn't potentially used by another social system instead for a far different outcome. But within the capitalist system, the same people that want to destroy the same social net that has existed since the Roosevelt days are eager to entertain AI applications as much as possible because they sense that this opportunity for increasing wealth. I was reading today something from Morgan Stanley, a big Wall Street firm, predicting a vast increase in what they call U.S. productivity driven by investment. This is a quote. By investments in technology, especially artificial intelligence, to boost worker efficiency and lower costs. And these same people, in with the collapse of the Soviet Union, they kind of forego a lot of potential opportunities for technological innovation in production. In order to take advantage of the vast new labor pool, cheap labor pools in Asia and Eastern Europe and elsewhere. And so that era, as this same article talks about, is kind of coming to a close as those regions of the workers and the nations in those regions are becoming less interested in maintaining the same social structure of economic structure of dominance by the U.S. and Western Europe and want to become more independent, have set up something called BRICS and so on. This means that the ruling class here, the billionaire class here wants to increase the productivity of our working class, lower wages, lower living standards, and yes, cut back on the social safety net in order to continue their profit streams that they were using the low wages they were paying for overseas workers to cut the living standards to make workers here the same as that. Now, of course, for many, many, many workers, it has been very low. Like I said before, the McDonald's rate of pay is the starvation rate of pay. But this means a general attempt to lower the standard of living here as well, in order to maintain that same level of profits or increase that level of profits for them.
Yeah, and so really all you're kind of, not all you're getting at, but a main point of what you're getting at is just that, right? In this system that we have, this globalized system, it effectively becomes a race to the bottom, and AI may very well just go and ramping up the pace of that race to the bottom.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah,
and so what I have to ask as well is then, right, because at least I think now, a couple of things. So one, I think Americans are lulled into a sense of false security in the sense that we have this idea that, like, well, things can't be too bad, you know? I got my Xbox. I have high-speed internet. Right. You know, I've got my McDonald's, right? So things can't be too bad, right? But then, obviously, as we know, most people are living paycheck to paycheck. You know, most people, if you take, they're two or three paychecks away from being homeless. And so the thing is that kind of when or if this does, right, kind of come to fruition, right, the decreasing of wages, right, people have something to hold on to. But do you think it's still going to be the same in terms of people still, right, even with this decrease in wage, potential decrease in wages in the future, I think it's going to be the same where people still think they have something to hold on to? And also, do you think, because I know it failed, obviously, right, but Zuckerberg was pushing Meta as digital landscape and whatnot. Do you think people maybe get caught up in the digital landscape as a form of escapism from their current reality?
Well, it's hard to predict the future, as you know, but I think that there's several factors going on at once. There is a popularity now, for example, for unions. It's rising now to the level not seen since the 60s. And also, there is for the youth in our country, especially the young workers, there's a lot of factors that are confronting them, that are awakening them. They've become woke. And this is why sectors of our ruling class are very concerned about the consciousness of the growing consciousness that's arising among our class, particularly the younger part of it, a consciousness of solidarity, for example, that was reflected in the Black Lives Matter movement, where you have the people of all nationalities joining forces, protesting and struggling in the streets over that. The women's struggle with the choice movement erupting, and the movement to support migrants at the border with their children being torn away from their parents. You have a lot of things going on that is awakening people. Plus, you have other factors, like the lifespan in the U.S. has been declining for the last few years versus other countries like China, where it's now surpassed the U.S. I mean, the whole healthcare system exposed by the pandemic to be not a system at all, but just a fiasco, that has cost the lives of millions of people here. There's a lot of energy being generated by all of this. So the question becomes, how can this be engaged into a real struggle to accomplish something? And that's what we have to confront as socialist activists, is to how do we engage that energy that is building? Now, this is the summer of strikes, so we can see it on the streets, on the picket lines. How do we engage that energy to make a real change in a social system so that real accomplishments in social, or do we have to retreat backwards to where they want us to go, into a harder life? And that's the question that we're confronted with. And that's the set of tasks that we're confronting. I do want to talk a little bit about artificial intelligence used in another social system. This is a tool that takes a vast amount of data from people and can be used to have a system, an economic system, instead of being based on profit and private ownership and profit, can be used based on social ownership and planning, scientific planning. This can be implementing scientific planning, helping to implement it. It has to be guided by real human beings, but it can be a tool for that that has tremendous potential. I think that's the one thing that the billionaire class is really afraid about. It, if a country, say, for China, is successful in implementing it as a successful tool in its planning, economic planning, then that creates an example for people all around the world, including here, on how to properly use something like this.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The ruling class is 100% afraid that if we are aware of alternatives, if we see that there is something, there's an alternative other than what we currently have, other than the nonstop grind, then what are the people going to demand? And this is why we've been seeing, and this has been going on for some time now, right? But, socialism being disparaged, conflating it with fascism, this whole idea of woke, and it being this amorphous term that pretty much means whatever, those on the right or those who don't, whatever it is they don't like, it suddenly woke. Although, things of that sort. But yeah,
right.
This is all 100% in response to people questioning just the basics. Like, hey, why am I working 40 hours a week and yet still living the paycheck to paycheck? Why is it I have health insurance I'm never able to use it? When I do try and use it, they try and find a loophole to cancel out the policy, you know?
Right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. In each of those, especially healthcare, when you think about it, what they want to use, for example, for genetic studies, they want people to have the health insurance decide from genetic studies, say at birth. This is something that can, something like AI could give you a person some idea of genetic study at birth, that you may at the age of 40 have a higher percentage of chances of getting, say, colon cancer than the average person. Well, in a socialist system that concerns itself for your health care, then that would mean you would be properly testing earlier to detect any suspicious polyps in your colon or something, and so that you would have a better guarantee of a longer lifespan and a happier life, a healthy lifespan. Whereas in a capitalist system, it would be used by an insurance company to limit their coverage and to retain their profits because you have a higher chance and higher risk of having health insurance. Or if you were able to get health insurance, you'd have to pay a higher premium because it would be all a matter of profit. This puts in sharp relief the differences between the two social systems. And that's the choice that we must make clear to our class. And I think it becomes easier to make clear as more and more struggles erupt. But still, that's our job, is to make clear these contrasts so that we have some kind of direction to go to for the future.
100%. We need to go, and we need to, you know, let people know, hey, there are alternatives. There are other ways of doing things that are not, do not have to fit within the current paradigm, because obviously, as we all know, the current paradigm is not working and is designed not to work for average everyday people.
Right. Exactly right. And it's a hard task. It's a very hard thing, because as you said, we're constantly bombarded by rhetoric from the corporate media that this is all a terrible idea, that this can't work. This is woke. This is people using strategies that are impossible to do. Meanwhile, as they're busy in the back room counting their money. So it is a tough thing to do. And even if it's implemented, even if we had a socialist system and had AI to help us plan and everything, it still would be a difficult task. We'd have to have, you know, making conscious decisions about how things should go for the benefit of people rather than profits. It's harder. It takes discussion and planning and real people making choices, whereas currently we have basically a gambling casino on Wall Street, where that kind of scheme is used to amass huge profits for a few, but a declining living standard for the many.
Yeah, and I know. I do think that, right, obviously, as the, but I think there's reason for hope, you know? Like I said, it's a summer of strikes. People are becoming more, open and realizing, right, what is going on. And they are active, in that they, like, they want to fight back. They want to organize. They want to push back. So I think there is so much reason to hope, you know?
Right. I agree. Absolutely. And people are taking a more global output look, too. They are looking at questions about what goes on overseas. Now, of course, that's carefully measured by our corporate media talking about globally, but still, some of it is penetrating the population here. And it is a, as you say, it is a more hopeful situation here than it's been in a long time.
And also, I think that's a good note to end on, a note of hope, you know?
Exactly right.
So thank you for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. And I look forward to having you on in the future.
Thank you very much. And good luck to you.
X is for Malcolm, Mr. Elder Hodgson. Y is for the youth, we need to organize them. Z is for Zimbabwe, Zulu or Zaire. Now I'm at my zenith, high up in the air. And I don't really care if I don't write no hook. As long as when you hear it, you go pick up a book and learn your history, and then you'll be alright. Fist in the air, peace and good night.